Welcome back to another episode of The Devil's Party. And we're looking at Canto 8 of Book 3 of The Fairy Queen.
We certainly are. Yeah. That's 2/3 of the way through Book 3.
Mm. We're racing along. Mm. Well, okay. We're ambling along. Ambling, of course, is originally a pace for a horse.
Mm.
It means a sort of steady, even walk, you know.
Okay.
In fact, there was a kind of horse called an ambler. The wife of Barth rides an ambler.
Well, that checks out.
Hmm. So, the spoiler is... The witch creates a snowy lady, like to Florimel, who, wronged by Carl, by Proteus saved, is sought by Paridel. So, see how that...
It really tells you everything that's going to happen.
Well, not only that, but it really gives you a sort of condensed image of Florimel as basically...
Object of desire. Yeah.
So
men want
just in two lines. Well, one septenary, which is a 7-beat line. We've got a wronged by a carl, that is to say, a peasant,
a churl.
Yes, of course. Saved by Proteus, who wants to bang her, and sought by Paridel, who
also wants to bang.
Yes,
her.
And the Carlos too. Mm. So you know, basically. As I've said before, this is a very gothic motif.
The
fleeing heroine, endangered chastity. Yeah. Not to mention the monsters. So oft as I this history record, my heart doth melt with mere compassion to think how causeless of her own accord this gentle damsel whom I write upon should plunged be in such affliction without all hope of comfort or relief. It sure I ween the hardest heart of stone would hardly find to aggravate her grief. For misery craves rather mercy than reprieve. Reprieve meaning reproving. Aggravate, of course, is the word that now just means irritate, doesn't it? But it originally meant to make heavier or more serious or more grave, to aggravate. He aggravated his crimes by burning the house down, that kind of thing. But that accursed hag, her hostess late, had so enrankled her malicious heart that she desired the abridgment of her fate or long enlargement of her painful smart. So this is the witch who now wants revenge on her for spurning her son and therefore makes the beast of lust who goes after her and of course is thwarted by her getting into the boat.
That's right.
Yeah. So this is Entrelacement. We are returning to that
back
narrative.
At the farm.
Back at the farm. That's right. Which by her wicked art late forth she sent, she back returning spied, tied with her broken girdle, it a part of her rich spoils whom he had erst destroyed, she weaned, and wondrous gladness to her heart applied. She thinks the girdle is part of the golden girdle is part of her, the spoils.
But again, it's just a projection of male desire, anxiety, interpretation of female sexuality.
Yeah.
It's not real.
Not real, no. Not real. And with it running hastily to her son, thought with that sight him much to have relieved, who therefore deeming sure the thing is done, his former grief with fury fresh revived, much more than erst, and would have all gates rived the heart out of his breast. For sith her dead he surely deemed, himself he thought deprived quite of all hope, wherewith he long had fed his foolish malady, and long time had misled. So the son's unhappy because he thinks this is a sign that Florimel is dead. With thought whereof, exceeding mad he grew. In his rage, his mother would have slain. It is interesting, isn't it, that we remember that Milton distinguishes different types of anger and rage at the beginning of Book 9 of Paradise Lost.
Mm.
And rage is thwarted lust, basically. The rage of Turnus for Lavinia disespoused. And Spencer seems to use the word fairly consistently with that particular meaning. We don't do that now, do we? I don't think we do. We think
people
of rage,
just use synonyms and
think
that everything means
the
same.
They blur the same.
Mm.
But of course, a fundamental truth about language is that there are no true synonyms, or vanishingly few. Gorse and furze are the only pair I know.
What?
Well, gorse and furze. Well, gorse or furze is a kind of spiky little plant that grows on moorland in England. So, you wouldn't have ever come across it.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah?
Yep. Oh. From Yorkshire.
Oh. Right.
Been to the moors?
Been to the moors. Well, there we are. Good.
Yes.
But every other pair you think are synonymous either have differences in distribution. So, you know, famously you have a powerful car or a strong cup of tea, but you don't have a powerful cup of tea or a strong car. Or they differ in, we call that collocation, what they're found with, if you like. Or they differ in, again, differing.
I'm going to let it go through to the keeper. Yes.
They differ in connotations.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, in fact, you know, language isn't redundant. Language doesn't do redundancy. The trouble is that to people who are less familiar with the language or less careful of it, these distinctions tend to blur or blend.
This is why when I'm at the students about being specific, they look at me funny.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
You have to use the right words.
Well, some of them think that literary discourse is about vagueness. That'll get you by, you know.
It's the opposite.
It's quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. Sorry. Mm. Ooh, that's nice.
Peter's eating a lovely tart.
Mm. I am. Now I've lost my place.
Four.
We thought thereof. Exceeding mad. Oh, yes. Exceeding mad he grew. In his rage, his mother would have slain had she not fled into a secret mew. That's a sort of like a courtyard or a mews. Mews were stables, of course, in London.
Yeah.
Mm. Where she was wont her sprites to entertain, the masters of her art. Masters is a funny word here because it means spirit helpers who are generally servants. So it's, remember Prospero says, he says, yells of hills, books, standing lakes and groves, by whose aid, weak masters though ye be, I have bedimmed the noontide sun, called forth the mutinous winds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. So it's a word. It's a word that's likely to throw you if you're not aware of that. There she was fain to call them all in order to her aid, and them conjure upon eternal pain to counsel her so carefully dismayed, how she might heal her son, whose senses were decayed. By their advice and her own wicked wit, she there devised a wondrous work to frame, whose like on earth was never framed yet. Frame is an interesting word here, isn't it? Because it's the
artfulness.
Yeah.
Meeting. Yeah.
Yeah. And remember, now gins this goodly frame of temperance fairly to rise, which introduces the bow of breath, which is a framing. But it's also a word that's often used of God's creation. So it's quite an interesting word here with interesting resonances. Connotations, indeed. So she's like a kind of little mini god here.
A mini god.
A parody god. Who's like on earth was never framed yet, that even nature's self envied the same. Well, you see, even nature, God's framing. And grudge to see the counterfeit should shame the thing itself. Again, echoes of the Bower of Bliss here, where your simulacrum of nature, in a sense, is kind of better than nature, because, you know, you've got all the beauty of the leaves and things, but you haven't got any lice or weevils or all the other stuff.
Mm.
It's just not real, is the point. In hand she boldly took to make another like the former dame, another Florimel, in shape and look so lively and so like, that many it mistook. This false Florimel, of course, is very interestingly suddenly becoming not fantasy, but a kind of weird
GPT,
reality.
Yeah.
ChatGPT and deepfakes.
Deepfakes, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, then the what they're doing with porn now. revenge porn and things. You get someone's image.
Oh,
and,
I see. Okay. Okay.
What could go wrong?
Well, I know. Yeah, well, look, I tell you what, bit of a deviation here, but so to speak. But when we get into 24 and the American election, there's going to be an awful lot of deep fakery of Biden and.
I think I might just log out of
reality
for
a bit.
Maybe we'll do that.
Yes.
Bye bye.
That's right.
See you on the other side.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah.
Balenciaga Pope. You still haven't seen that. The Pope in his Balenciaga jacket.
Oh, I see. Yeah. No, I've seen the image.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was called that.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. The substance whereof she the body made was purest snow in massy mould congealed.
That's a very interesting line. No?
What are you thinking of?
Well, pure snow and the whiteness and what they're trying to say about female sexuality.
Oh, I see, yes.
Massy mould congealed.
Yes.
The fact that it's fake, it's not real, it's crime against nature kind of thing.
Yeah.
To what they're doing to female sexuality and femaleness.
That's right, because Florimel is called snowy, but it's reference to she has the pale skin, which is a mark of beauty in Elizabethan culture.
It's like pure snow is what the men want, but the reality is that she's just congealed mass into a way that they like.
Yes.
Like a golem.
Like a golem. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Or that Jewish... Yeah, you meant it... Do you mean a guy like a golem?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Yes. You're not thinking of the Lord of the Rings?
No.
No.
Golem?
Golem.
Oh, I've been saying golem.
Golem. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't pretend to. exactly so. And here it's just the coldness and the whiteness and the deadness.
What is it? It doesn't even have to have a pulse.
No.
Do, you know?
Well, we've talked about this with the turkey heads.
The turkey heads. it's such an indictment on male sexuality.
It is. Well, male sexuality is not complicated, frankly, in its essence.
I will take your word for it.
It doesn't take account of irony or parody or... It's not interested in those things.
It might be warm.
Well, that's right.
That's enough.
Exactly. Yeah. And as we have, I think, said, this all has a very obvious evolutionary explanation in that sperm is cheap and mass-produced, cast it around. Some of it might... It's like spam. Sperm is like spam. You know, send spam
not
to...
Not the ham.
Ooh. That's an unpleasant thought. But you send a million spam emails out, and if one of them bites home and the person, you know, sends away for a fraudulent offer, then you jackpot. Bingo. Whereas eggs are few and precious and shouldn't be squandered.
Yes.
Now. So... So, male sexuality, nice and simple. Well, basically simple. Nothing human is ever quite simple, is it? And messy mould, congealed. Yes, it is rather clever, this, because mould can mean earth, of course, but it can also mean like a jelly mould. You pour stuff into it to make something. So there's whole idea of, you know, Hopkins uses the word mould of human creation in this sense to remind us that we are of the earth, earthy. We're mould earth.
Mm-hmm.
A mole used to be...
Yeah.
Well, it used to be called a mould warp. And a warp is an old word for throw. So the mole, when the mole's digging, it throws earth out of its...
It's creating
so
a mould.
Yeah, it's kicking it. Well, so that's where the word mole comes from. It's just mold without the D on the end. It's fallen off.
Goddamn.
But also, mold is a sign of decay.
Yes.
Yeah. Moldy. It's gone stale. It's
And again, we're back to language being this kind of divine.
Yes, exactly. Revelatory. Yes, these little reticulations of meaning that God has put there, I suppose.
Mm.
Yeah, well, at least that's what they thought. Yes, exactly. So you're quite right. It's a fascinating line in massy mould. And again, massy, congealed too. Mm. Yeah. This is something that's gone off in the fridge, basically, isn't it?
Yep, that's cottage cheese. Been there too long.
That's right. Which she had gathered in a shady glade of the Rapian Hills to her revealed. They're just very snowy. They're in Russia. By errant sprites, but from all men concealed. The same she tempered with fine mercury. And virgin mercury, because of course it's called quicksilver.
Of course,
it's silver in colour, and quick means alive. Of course, like, you know, the quick of your nail is the living part of it.
God damn.
Yeah.
The things I learn in this room.
I know. Well, you know, Christ will come at the last judgment to judge the quick and the dead.
Thought you just had to run fast.
Catch me if you can. Yeah. So Mercury then, Mercury is appropriate to give a sort of simulacrum of life.
Right.
Mm. This is a recipe for making a golem.
A Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Frankenstein's creature.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes. Yes, we shouldn't say monster. It's very discriminatory.
We're meant to say creature now.
Let's say creature.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Is that actually real? I mean, is that...
The creature monster thing? Yeah, absolutely. I taught for a school a few years ago, and if they said monster, they got marked down. They had to call creature. I think they were trying... The more I think about it, I think they were trying to fight back against this kind of... You know, the popular culture view of the monster or the creature.
Oh, I
with the neck bolts. Like, they really wanted to understand
the Hollywood monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They wanted them to understand him as a man of feeling.
Oh, look, okay, that's all right.
Educated.
So it's not about inclusiveness for monsters.
No.
Not that I'm against it.
No. But I mean, we did, you know, Werther last week, and it was fun to point out to them all that this is what the creature read to learn how to feel. And they all went, oh, he makes sense now. I'm like, there it is, guys. Yes. Now he does.
And Paradise Lost.
Mm. And Volney's Ruins of Empire. And, you know, once you line those up, it's what you need for an education, but you need more.
Yes, probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Paradise Lost is a true history, and then Werther to learn how to feel.
Right, yeah.
You're going to have some holes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Anyway,
back to our monster. Sorry, creature. And virgin wax that never yet was sealed. So that's actually, this is almost getting into witchcraft or pagan magic.
It is. Witchy.
Yeah, the doctrine of similitudes. You know, where like effects produce like causes like produce like effects, so that you make a wax doll of your enemy and stick pins in, and they feel pain where you stick the pin in the doll.
Someone stop poking me in the back.
I take it this is a side effect.
Yes.
Yes. Well, look, we were never meant to have such huge babies. It's the evolution of the brain. It's just great.
And fantastic. Really?
Yeah, oh yeah. Other animals don't have problems. Look at dogs. They spew out a dozen puppies.
No issue whatsoever.
No, serious. No, it's the overgrowing of our brain, getting out through...
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the problem. So it's as big as it could be. And that's why, you know, we're born with rather flexible skulls.
Fucked up heads, yeah. Yeah, you can see the pulsing of the brain through some of the holes.
Yeah. And why we're born so helpless. Whereas, you know, an antelope pops out and it's ready to rush off.
Yeah, giraffes are my favourite. They just fall.
That's right.
And they're good to go.
That's right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. No, yet was sealed. The virgin was... So, the virgin was suggested it was unsealed, not unsealed.
Is the point that there's just been wax? It's wax that's never been used. It's special, pure wax.
Well, that's the idea, yes. And that's what I meant about similitudes.
Like
and therefore she's...
Chaste wax.
Chaste wax, yes. Because, well, when you open a letter, of course, you break the seal. So it's like a symbolic...
fuck's sake.
I know, but...
Christ.
I know.
Everything.
Everything, yes. Yeah, sex everywhere. Thank you, Freud. Oh, yes. And mingled them with perfect vermilion, that like a lively sanguine it seemed to the eye. So, it looks alive. It looks blood, as though it's blood, but it's really just colour. It's just painting. It's just vermilion paint. But like a lively sanguine, it seemed to the... Oh, wow. That's a very ropey line. Well, I think the line is as ropey as the, you know, the creature is dodgy. Yeah, it just doesn't work as an Alexandrine. Well, there are two problems. One, you've got to find a pause somehow in the middle of the word sanguine. And then seemed is out of place as a stress syllable. It's what's called a... Well, in certain circles, called a stress maximum in weak position, which we don't want.
In certain circles.
Well.
A stressed maximum in weak position.
Yes. It's generative metrics, as they call it. But that's a sort of quick and dirty way of describing it. Instead of eyes, two burning... Now...
There we go.
Yes. We have the sonnet lady.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
That's verbatim. Who else says that?
Oh, well, I mean, everybody who writes a talking sonnet.
Two burning lamps, she said.
In silver sockets, shining like the skies, and a quick-moving spirit to direct to stir and roll them, like a woman's eyes.
Well, that's got to go on the article, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Instead of yellow locks, she did devise with golden wire. The golden wire? Remember, if hairs be wires, black wires grow on her head. So what he's doing, it's really very clever. Because I've often said that, you know, the sonnet lady, she's dissected in a sense. And she's like a sort of tailor's dummy stuck with jewels. She's like a sort of dead thing.
Mm.
And what Spencer's doing very cleverly here is switching it round. So that this dead thing that's going to look as though we're alive looks exactly like the lady of the Petrarchan sonnet.
Yes. It looks alive.
Yes, it looks alive. Exactly. Who, of course, never speaks, never does anything.
It's just projected upon.
Just projected.
Which is why Britta Mart Belfoby stands out so much.
Yes, exactly.
She's responsive. Like, you look at her and you're forced to respond to her.
Exactly.
What she's doing to you, yeah.
Exactly. Well, this is a sort of Kim Kardashian figure, you know.
That'll do.
Yes. A dead, zombie-like creature. A simulacrum of female beauty. It's very witty, isn't it, to do this?
He's a clever little man.
Oh, he is. With golden wire to weave her curled head, yet golden wire was not so yellow thrice as Florimel's fair hair. So that's the real Florimel, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And in the stead of life she put a sprite to rule the carcass. Dead. See how it ends heavily on that word, dead. We're reminded. This is just a carcass walking around, but it's got a sprite. And a sprite, of course, is basically a demon.
Yeah.
So if you have it away with the false Florimel...
You're having it away with a demon.
You're committing demoniality.
Ooh.
Mm.
Which is what witches were doing with Satan.
Oh, absolutely. At the Sabbath, yes. Yes.
Rock on.
And what some critics have accused Faustus of doing when, you know, the Helen at the end turns up. Sweetheart, make me immortal with a kiss.
Oh, come on.
I know, look, I don't say this.
Okay.
But there are critics who say that he commits demoniality.
Oh, piss off.
And that's why he goes to hell. And that's
no,
it.
No, that's not why he goes
no,
to hell.
I know. It's very stupid, isn't it? Because it would make the whole play hinge upon an accidental... You know,
it's ridiculous. Look at me, ready to fight. Come at me. Yeah, that's absurd.
It is absurd. Yeah.
I hate critics sometimes.
I know.
I don't even read the book. Yeah. It's the false Florimel works so well, given what we've just had with Belphoebe and Amoret, like this whole thing on chastity. We get. The real lady compared to the ideal.
Yes.
All the way through.
Yes. And ideas about the female body, too. This is the male fact. This is the turkey head.
The turkey basically. Head. Yeah. False floramel is a turkey head.
Or a kind of pornographic cartoon image. Something like that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of dead but exaggerated.
Mm.
I imagine she's got enormous
hands.
Hands? Enormous hands. Who knows? They're not mentioned. No, they are often. Well, they're sometimes mentioned in the Sonnet Lady. They're like hemispheres.
Yeah, it should be hurt your back.
Well, yes, I know. Yeah, exactly.
Too much of a good thing.
Too much of a good thing. Quite. A wicked sprite. Here we are, I see. Because sprites can be neutral.
Yeah, Ariel in Rape of the Lock.
Well, Ariel in Tempest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both of those. So.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Ariel in Rape of the Lock, of course, he does have wicked designs on Belinda.
Valid.
It's also kind of interested. It's not just lust. It's also the fact that if you, suppose you were a demon, if you could
have been accused,
if you could achieve intercourse with a mortal, then it would make
A plus.
Yeah, make you mortal, immortal too, make you a kind of goddess.
Cool.
Yeah, apparently.
Apparently, well,
they say. On the a wicked sprite who fought with fawning guile. Fawning guile. Now, isn't that a lovely description of
courtly love? Fawn guile.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. But also of a sort of male fantasy of ideal female behaviour. Submissive, but at the same time suspected of guile. The submissiveness is just a guile. So it's a kind of male view, a male imposition on female behaviour.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. It's a great phrase. A wicked sprite who fought with fawning guile. And fair resemblance above all the rest, which with the Prince of Darkness fell some while from heaven's bliss and everlasting rest. So, yeah, it's a devil. Him needed not instruct. Now, you see how this devil is masculine. This is actually a female impersonator, this devil, the false Floramel. Him needed not instruct which way were best himself to fashion likest Floramel, nor how to speak, nor how to use his gestures, for he encounter feasance that excel. So he's an excellent female impersonator.
Mm.
I hesitate to mention this, but you know Barry Humphreys once, who's now, alack, gone. He once said that Australian women are the best female impersonators in the world.
Bush pigs.
Which is, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's not a sort of camp parody. Well, he's a sort of parody, but he's a skillful parody.
Mm.
So it could deceive, a bit like the Garden of the Adonis, the Bower of Bliss.
Yeah.
He could deceive, the white who views the ivy not well advised might deem it ivy true.
It's almost insulting that we have to get another man to distract the men. Why couldn't a woman do it?
Well, because he is acting out the male fantasy of female behaviour. Yeah. So he's got a kind of intimate knowledge of what...
It is, but he's not self-aware of what he's doing, but he is, but he...
Yeah, yeah. It's probably more like, Singapore, Boogie Street in Singapore? Boogie Street is... Oh, I don't know if it's still the case, because it's a very puritanical government, isn't it? But they used to have young men who were brilliant female impersonators.
Yes.
But it's a performance, and obviously it's going to be, to some extent, exaggerated.
Pretty
boys. Parodic. Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, in Thailand, it's like Tiger something. In Phuket, there's a similar streak. Yeah.
Right,
Tiger Lane or something.
Yeah. And that's what we've got here.
Tried to get rid of my brother. Yes, we do have that here.
Yeah. It's a fascinating... I don't know if anyone's written about this. I mean, you know, we've seen that the whole idea of spend certain sexuality is also kind of taboo, critically speaking.
And people, more contemporary scholarship seems to just zone in on one tiny thing and then not look at anything else. Almost as if to do so, like it's almost like they're saying, "Oh, everyone else has done that already. I just want to pick this tiny thing apart."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's almost the TLDR syndrome, isn't it?
Mm.
That's the thing. I mean, it is. It's 40,000 lines.
You can't acknowledge the whole thing. It's part of it. I get that. But yeah, it's almost like they're scared.
Yes.
Because there's so much written.
So, well, there is, but...
not all of the good, yes.
No, not all of the good, exactly. And a lot of it, a bit old-fashioned in many ways.
I found some of the worst ones of the female academics. Come on.
Oh, you know,
you're letting the side down.
I was at the Renaissance Society of America conference in Toronto years ago. And I went to this paper on Spencer, given by a female professor. And all throughout the talk, she pronounced all the Spencerian names she could wrongly. So she talked about Guyon and Lucifera. And of course, every line where they occur would be buggered by that if you said it like that. So she's been reading this poem and she's got no ear for the music, not a shred of a sense of the music of the poem.
Mm.
Why would you even bother, in a way? I mean, it becomes a sort of exercise in sociology or something if you can't.
That's what our students want now.
Yeah, I know. If you can't respond to it as poetry.
Mm.
That was a shocker.
Did you say anything?
No. Well, I mean, you know.
Politely left.
Yeah. So how to speak, the how to use his jest, for he in counterpheasants did excel, and all the wiles of women's wit knew passing well. Of course, think about it, very good boy actors who have to act mature women, like Cleopatra in Shakespeare's plays, must have had something of this kind of skill of counterfeiting. So in fact, all he had to do, he didn't have to go to Boogie Street, he just had to go to the theatre,
yeah,
and he would see
pop across the river,
yeah, and you know they must have been good because of various little meta-theatrical touches. Like famously, when Cleopatra is worried about how she'll be represented in Rome as a defeated foreign leader, she'd be paraded through the streets. You know, people chuck bananas at her or whatever. And she says, I shall see some squeaking Cleopatra buoy my greatness in the posture of a whore. In other words, producing a crude parody. Now, Shakespeare must have been pretty damn confident that the boy playing Cleopatra who spoke those lines wouldn't look absurd, that he was a credible Cleopatra. Now, it's a very interesting question. People don't go into this enough. You know, we just think of, you know, Cleopatra as a woman, Antony as a man.
Because it had to be before their voices broke.
Oh, yeah.
So how, 9?
Yes.
9 to 14?
Well, no, people's voices broke much later.
Okay.
Nutrition.
Of course.
So up to maybe 14, 15, you'd be good. Remember when Hamlet greets the players and he says, "Ah, my young lady, pray God your voice be not cracked in the ring like a piece of uncovered gold."
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, it's not just the voice, it's everything. So they are simulating, but they're doing it in a way that's got to be halfway convincing.
Drag queens.
Yeah!
Come at them now, Republicans. Go for Shakespeare. Go on, do it.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. So. Him shaped thus, she decked in garments gay. Well, of course, you know.
Yeah.
Drag queens don't wear tracksuit pants, do they?
No.
A
lot of sequins.
A lot of sequins. Which Florimel had left behind her late.
What? Well, what? She dropped a dress.
Her whole wardrobe. Well, because she left in a hurry. Didn't have time to pack. No, who was carrying this suitcase as she was fleeing
We know better than to ask we these do. Questions.
But whoso then her saw would surely say, normally, of course, women have a dwarf.
Yeah.
Eunice's got a dwarf and...
Mine's waiting outside.
Yes, exactly. Laden with your needments. And that whoso then her saw would surely say it was herself whom it did imitate, or fairer than herself, if aught Aldgate might fairer be. So he's getting a bit... The fact that she is decked up in these garments gay is the most convincing thing about her, almost. So gay that whoso then her saw would surely say it was herself whom it did imitate, or fairer than herself, if aught Aldgate might fairer be. And then she forth brought unto her son that lay in field state, who seeing her gan straight up start. I bet he did. And thought, well, I think maybe that joke is in there. I'm not...
No, yeah.
Naughty Spencer. And thought she was the lady self whom he so long had sought. Incidentally, notice the interesting use of a Old English / medieval genitive of lady there. Because, of course, the genitive in English got... In Old English, it takes various forms, as in German. But in Middle English, it got generalized to a z, as in the dog's bone, you know. But lady, the genitive of lady is lady, because it would be... There would be a schwa on the end which had been lost. So that's why we say Lady Day. You know, the 25th of March, Lady Day. Well, we don't say that. No?
What do we do on Lady Day?
Well, Lady Day is the Annunciation of the Blessed Virgin Mary. It's exactly 9 months before Christmas. Yeah. Look.
No further questions, it's a mystery, yeah.
But also Lady Day was a quarter day in the year, so it was a day when you settled debts, you know, legal cases.
I like that we celebrate the idea that a woman didn't have sex. Someone came in her ear.
Well, it came through exactly with ectoplasmic sperm.
Yeah,
true. Interesting.
Lady Day.
You never heard Lady Day?
Sorry. We still celebrate it?
Well, I don't, obviously.
Somebody come in here one day.
Catholics must, I suppose.
What are they doing over there? I don't understand.
But also, as I say, it was a legal thing. It was one of the quarter days of the year. In fact, in Cambridge, if you're able to borrow books from the university library, which is really annoying, but senior fellows of colleges can, then you don't have to return until the next quarter day. Huh. So you might find a volume of, you know, the Philological Quarterly or something is out, and some don has it and doesn't have to return it till Lady Day or Midsummer or possibly, what do they call it, you know, All Hallows.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. They're terms,
yes.
Like Michaelmas.
Yeah, that's right. So,
yes, sorry.
That was totally unnecessary grammatical excursion, but I was quite interested to see.
I had a good time.
So, it should be ladies' self, but that's the old-fashioned way of saying ladies, lady. Whom he so long had sought. Then fast her clipping twixt his arm is twain, extremely joyed in so happy sight, and soon forgot his former sickly pain. But she, the more to seem such as she hight, coyly rebutted his embracement light. Notice now, male devil plus costume, so to speak, has turned into she, but it's a false she. It's a pseudo she.
It's very interesting, because what then makes the person? Is it the genitalia or the spirit inside?
Yeah.
Some people today would have some debates about
I
that.
I know. Look, yeah. Even the pronoun question pops up here, doesn't it? Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes.
Spencer knew.
He did. Yeah. But she, the more to seem such as she hight, coyly rebutted his embracement light. Incidentally, it shows that he didn't share Milton's view that devils, like angels, can be shapeshifters.
Remember, angels can assume any sex they please.
That's right.
Or what sex they please.
Either shape, either shape assume.
Either shape assume, yes. Coyly rebutted is embracement light. Coyly meaning sort of haughtily.
We've talked about coy.
Yeah, because that modern meaning of coquettishly, yes, that really dates from the 18th century at the very earliest. And so this is much more, but you know, it's a kind of haughty. She's playing the game of courtly love where the lady is proud and demanding and says, "Kneel, thou grovelling slave."
Part of the game. She's going to give it up at some point.
Exactly. And you've got But you've got to have the game first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the foreplay.
Like to his coy. Exactly. It's like to his coy mistress, where he's basically saying, you know, can we hurry this up a bit?
Oh yeah.
Because you know, we don't have forever to play this game. Had we but world enough and time, this coyness lady were no crime. It's the very same word.
Nice.
So coyly rebutted his embracement light, yet still with gentle countenance retained enough to hold a fool in vain delight. So it's a kind of go away, come here.
Yeah.
A bit like Belinda in The Rape of the Lock, who manages that careful sort of attracting men but holding them at arm's length at the same time.
Safe.
Yes,
like
inside.
Elizabeth as well.
Yeah, it's a game, and you know, it's a curious parody, of course, of Belle Phoebe, who doesn't seek to attract anybody, but
she's not interested at all.
No, but she does because she's like the sun, you know. But also, she represses foul lust, partly with her boar spear. It'll do it every time.
Yes.
Women, carry a boar spear.
With your mace and your khakis.
Your khakis, yes. Your hatpin.
I don't have one handy often.
No.
But I do often have khakis.
But a boar spear will do it every time. Enough to hold a fool. Are they skillful pickpockets or just...
No, they're just shitty standover kids. Just shitty teens.
Enough to hold a fool in vain delight. Him long she so with shadows entertained, as her creatress had in charge to her ordained.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So again, she's doing this sort of male idea of female sexuality, you know, teasing and holding off and all that kind of thing. A sort of striptease.
Go away, come here is a good way of putting it.
Till on a day, as he disposed was to walk the woods, with that his idle fare, her to disport and idle time to pass, and the open freshness of the gentle air, because we know all demons like a nice walk in the country. Actually, Satan likes a nice walk in the country. Or remember when he goes into paradise, that lovely simile about like one who has long and populous city pent.
That's right.
He comes out to smell the fresh grass, you know, that's just been cut. And
yes, right. And then he tells himself, no, it's bad. Ah.
Yes, that's right. There's a knight that way there chanced to repair. Knight he was not, but a boastful swain, the deeds of arms had ever in despair. Proud braggadocio, that in vaunting vain his glory did repose, and credit did maintain. He's seeing, and it's quite a nice symmetry, isn't it, that braggadocio first of all approaches Belphoebe and is repressed with a ball spear.
And then he comes.
Comes and falls for.
The false
Florimel. He's seeing with that churl so fair a white, decked with many a costly ornament. So fair a white is actually quite interesting. I know it gives him a nice rhyme, but a white is just a person. It's a degendered word.
Again, it's anything will do.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Turkey necks.
Yes.
Turkey heads.
Exactly. Much marvelled thereat, as well he might, and thought that match a foul disparagement. His bloody spear eftsoons he boldly bent against the silly clown, who dead through fear fell straight to ground in great astonishment. A clown, of course, is simply a country dweller.
Of course it is.
Yes.
Like villains.
Yeah, like
yeah,
villains, yes.
Oh, that's rough.
I know.
When
does it come to mean...
Clown.
I don't know. Worth looking up in the OED.
Okay.
My suspicion would be the 19th century, but that's just a guess. Who did through fear fell straight to ground in great astonishment.
Villain, yeah.
Villain, said he, this lady is my dear. Die if thou it gainsay, I will away her there.
Yeah, he doesn't.
Which, of course, is a nice parody of standard knightly procedure.
You see another knight?
With a lady?
You smack him.
Exactly. And try to seize the lady. Like a game. Like a sort of game of chess or something, you know. The lady is the prize.
Mm.
And obviously, Spencer here is taking the piss out of that whole idea by having the false knight seize a false lady. The fearful churl durst not gainsay, nor do, but trembling stood and yielded him the prey. And finding little leisure her to woo, on trumpet steed her mounted without stay, and without rescue led her quite away. Proud man himself then Braggadocio seemed, and next to none, after that happy day, being possessed of that spoil which seemed the fairest white on ground, again white, and most of men esteemed. So she's like a kind of trophy hall.
Mm.
So again, you know, he depends entirely upon appearance, upon convincing people that he's a brave knight, as she/he depends entirely upon convincing people that she is a beautiful woman. But in both cases, it's hollow pretense.
Mm. It's interesting. Mm. It's interesting how somehow he's more legitimate than she is.
Well, yeah. I mean, maybe there's a point being made there. You know, a lot of...
It's okay for men to fake it.
Well, to bluff and bluster. Yeah. If it works, it works.
Yeah. Fake it till you make it. Yeah. Whereas women, no.
Well...
Evil.
That's right. That's right.
Hmm.
Rosalind in As You Like It says something like that, because she dresses as a boy, and Celia is a girl and remains a girl when they run away into the forest. And she says, you know, she's going to swagger a lot, because she says, you know, lots of men get by on swaggering and looking tough, even if they're actually
not.
Yes.
Hmm.
Exactly. A world where, you know, all men of a certain social status wear a sword. Yeah.
Imagine if every idiot had a sword. What?
Well, the level of violence in the streets of London was just appalling.
It would have been.
Yeah.
I wonder if women had all had swords, would it be different?
Well, that's a good thought, yes. Yeah, it's all daggers. Where would you put a sword? I suppose you'd have to wear something.
You could conceal it.
You could conceal it, yes.
You've got enough folds.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Even Chaucer was famously arraigned for beating up a friar in the Strand. You know,
friars. What are you going to do?
Friars. I know. Who wouldn't beat up a friar?
Evocative, you know. Provocative.
Provocative. That's right. Exactly. Well, you know, the author of the Morte d'Arthur, Malory. He was a bit of a thug. He was spent some time in. Prison
fire.
Yes.
What did he do?
Oh, well, there was some case of kidnap that might have been
rape.
Yeah. You know, who's going to judge? But when he saw himself free from pursuit, he gan make gentle purpose to his dame, with terms of love and lewdness dissolute. Lewdness generally means something like, of course, being uneducated or unlearned. But I think it's beginning to take on its modern meaning, because it's hard to understand.
Sexual leering?
Yeah, kind of thing. Yeah.
Rear window ethics.
What's that?
Rear window ethics.
Oh.
Leering.
Oh, leering.
Where you're not meant to.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
You know Rear Window?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Stella refers to it as Rear Window Ethics.
Oh, right, okay.
The ethics of.
I hadn't come across that term, yeah. Yeah. That's a good film. You know, it's amazing. The ABC a few years ago did a long Hitchcock festival on Friday nights, I think it was. And you know, see, it goes all the way from silent films to a film in the 70s or 80s, set in London. Extraordinary span of film history he covered. For he could well his glozing speeches frame, glozing, of course.
Satanic, glozing eyes.
So glozed the tempter,
mm-hmm.
and his prologue framed. So it's it means, yes, using deceitful arguments, if you like, false logic, as the devil will do to persuade people. The word glozing, I mean, it's what virtually all politicians do, isn't it? The Prime Minister then glozed for half an hour.
And a lot of media outlets.
Well, I know, yeah. Maybe that's why we don't have it anymore, because it's so ubiquitous. To such vain uses that him best became, but she thereto would lend but light regard, as seeming sorry that she ever came into his power, that used her so hard, to reave her honour, which she more than life preferred, which, of course, is absurd, because she's a male demon. She doesn't have any honour to be reft. And indeed, honour also meant, of course, the hymen. Presumably, yeah. Well, it guards your virginity, you see.
Yeah. From horseback riding.
No, no. Say no more. Bicycles.
Yeah.
Thus, as they too, of kindness treated long. So, again, the parody of courtly love. That one of those long discussions in a medieval courtly love poem about the nature of kindness, and, you know, the lady's being unkind by withholding her booty, and the chap is being unkind by insisting on her
booty,
and so on.
Yes.
There then by chance encountered on the way an armed knight. Oh yeah. Upon a courser strong, whose trampling feet upon the hollow lay, seemed the thunder, and did nigh affray their capon's courage. That capon's courage. A capon, of course, is a castrated rooster.
So, of course.
Of course. So, not a particularly ferocious or... Well,
sir, is that a rooster or a capon?
Well, quite. Well, the point is, if a castrated rooster is actually... The meat is tender and sweeter and plumper. Testosterone uses up life force. I mean, basically, castrated animals live longer than uncastrated male animals.
Oh. Okay.
And fain to cheer his lady in dismay, who seemed for fear to quake in every limb, and her to save from outrage, meekly prayed him. So she's asking, again, she, he, whatever, it, is asking him to protect her from being raped by this knight. So it's all, it's performance. Everything, absolutely everything she does is absurd performance because, of course, she's a demon. Or he's a demon. Fiercely that stranger forward came and nigh approaching. Ooh, nice.
That is nice.
And nice and jammed. I just must make a mark.
Add it to your graph.
Yes. Well, yeah, I know. It's the trouble with writing stuff, isn't it? You always want to add to it, but you can't.
What's... Are you graphing... Like, is it Paradise Lost that you've graphed?
Oh, partly, yes. Yes, the opening of Paradise Lost. But also comparative things like... You know, you think of Pope and Samuel Johnson as basically both writing heroic couplets. But in terms of the way they handle enjambment, they're actually very different. In fact, where they handle lots of things. So Johnson is much stricter, much more rigidly neoclassical, whereas Pope is much more...
Experimental.
Yeah, experimental. Oh, yes, fiercely that stranger forward came, and nigh approaching, with bold words and bitter threat, bade that same boaster as he might on high to leave to him that lady for a shoot. Exchange again. Women, I mean, he's always banging on about women as commodity, and you're supposed to kind of notice this. That there's something off about, and you know, if you think about it, all his readers are presumably calling themselves Christians. And at the very heart of Christian ethics is the idea that people are subjects and not objects, that they're not commodities.
Mm-hmm. Except for women.
Well, but yeah, but the Sermon on the Mount doesn't say that.
I know. I mean, I wasn't there, but...
Well, it's, there's a kind of deep contradiction in the way Christianity is practiced in this period, and
again, it's Augustine claims. and Saint Paul, isn't it, to blame for
a
lot of
that?
Not,
yes,
not all of it, obviously.
And no, I mean, Paul actually is less to blame than he's sometimes held to be, because some of those things are actually spurious. He never claimed that women weren't allowed to, you know, preach in church, for example.
Oh, really?
It's a spurious interpolation.
Okay, noted.
Mm. Yeah. By people who really wanted Christianity to become a kind of patriarchal bulldozer, which it did indeed become.
Mm.
But it's exactly like, you know, the weird schizophrenic way in which Americans interpret the Constitution, or used to interpret their Constitution. All men are created equal. There's no footnote saying, except those blacks. No. Oh, and women, yeah. And the poor.
And anyone who doesn't own land.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, yeah, all men are created equal. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sermon on the Mount, the same. They knew
well,
that they were only talking about.
They read it in a partial way, I suppose. And it's so clearly not. There are no footnotes on the Sermon on the Mount, either. Or bid him battle without further treat. Treat meaning exchange. That challenge did too peremptory seem, and filled his senses with abashment great. Yet seeing nigh him jeopardy extreme, he it dissembled well, and light seemed to esteem. Again, he's doing the bravado business.
Mm.
That word escheat, it also means something that belongs to you by right. You know, if you're the lord of the manor, then the land belongs to you by right, for example. So, again, it's an assumption that the woman's property, though, that's the point. That is at the heart of it. I mean, you think of modern Saudi Arabia, where the assumption that women are property is absolutely explicit in the law. If she's not the property of her husband, she's the property of her eldest son or her father. But, I know,
I'd be beheaded in a week, Peter. I'd be done so quickly.
Yes, right. Absolutely. Saying, thou foolish knight, that weenest with words to steal away, that I with blows have won, and brought through points of many perilous swords. But if thou list to see thy course arun, or prove thyself this sad encounter shun, and seek eke without hazard of thy head. At these proud words, another knight began to wax exceeding wroth, him a red to turn his steed about. Sure, he should be dead. So Braggadocio is trying to bluster his way out of this. The dog agrees.
Endlessly hilarious.
Sith then, said Braggadocio, needs thou wilt thy days abridge through proof of puissance. Turn we our steeds, that both in equal tilt may meet again, and each take happy chance. This said, and they both a furlong maintenance retired their steeds to run in even race. But Braggadocio, with his bloody lance, once having turned, and no more returned to face, but left his love to loss, and fled himself apace. So we're kind of in the territory of farce a bit here, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. And we just had
Fablio.
Fablio.
That's the oversized version. The knight him seeing fly, had no regard him to pursue, but to the lady rode, and having her from trumpet lightly reared upon his courser, set the lovely load. And that hardly needs comment, really, the lovely load. And with her fled away without abode. Well weened he that fairest Florimel it was, with whom in company he yode, and so herself did always to him tell, so made him think himself in heaven, but was in hell.
That's nice.
Yeah. And of course, if he indeed does the business with her, he will be guilty of the sin of,
because it's a sprite.
It's about the devil. It's the devil.
It's demon-y.
It's a demon. It's absolutely a demon. There's no ambiguity here.
Mm.
So he will be committing the sin of demoniality.
Mm. Which witches did.
They did. Yes.
Ostensibly.
Ostensibly, yes. It was very long and hard and cold. Apparently.
Apparently.
If you can rely on testimony.
I mean,
of
yeah.
that kind. Well, that's right. And of course, at least one critic. He's actually not really a critic. He's more a bibliographer. And I've forgotten his name for the moment. Sorry. But he thinks that Faustus commits demoniality with the false Helen.
Oh, you said last time.
Yeah.
But he doesn't.
No. And also, it would be an absurd way to have the plot turn on a kind of accident, you know. Oops.
A fennel.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
No, that's a silly idea. But of course, we can't avoid, I'm afraid, the double entente, should we say, on hell, as meaning the pudendum mulieris.
Okay. Nice.
We have to think. I mean, you know, if we come to this unblinkered by, you know, patriarchal habits of reading and assumptions that every Elizabethan writer is enamoured of those patriarchal habits, we can't really think that Spencer, as we've seen him, the kind of sensitivity he's shown, is really okay with the idea that any woman becomes instantly the property of a knight who happens to chase away or defeat her chap.
Yes.
It's
I mean, he's making fun of this, isn't he?
Yes,
he
absolutely is making fun of it. Hence, I think that, you know, the lovely load is actually deliberate, I think. The incongruity of it. If nothing else, we know that Spencer takes Christianity seriously, and Christianity is utterly incompatible with so many tenets of, you know, the code of chivalry.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Florimel herself was far away, and here we get our little switcheroo on the,
the entrelacement.
Entrelacement.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a nice little segue, isn't it? But Florimel herself was far away, driven to great distress by fortune strange. Oh, that's strange, yes, I think that's fair enough, isn't it? And taught the careful mariner to play, since late with chance hath compelled to change the land for sea, at random there to range. Yet there that cruel queen avengerous, and this is fortune we're talking about here, not satisfied so far her to estrange from courtly bliss and wonted happiness, did heap on her new waves of weary wretched. It's an odd way to think about fortune. Normally fortune is meant to be indifferent, really, to human.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she just spins her wheel happily and... you go up or you go down. But, of course, we also know, as Dante told us, that what men call fortune in this lower world is merely the operation of providence. Yes. But obscure and somewhat impenetrable.
Yes. You can't see it when you're in it.
No, exactly. Like an ant in a ham sandwich.
Or a human in a church.
Or a human in a church.
But I do like ant in a ham sandwich. Today I feel like an ant in a ham sandwich.
At a picnic, yes.
Hmm.
For being fled into the fish's boat for refuge from the monster's cruelty, long so she on the mighty main did float, and with the tide drove forward carelessly. For the air was mild, and clearer was the sky, and all his winds down earless did keep from stirring up their stormy enmity, as pitying to see her wail and weep, and all the while the fisher did securely sleep.
So, yeah, that false sense of security.
Yeah, the alarm bells go off. I mean, this is, you know, the basic... I'm not saying this is the locus of Minos, but this is the basic mechanism behind the locus of Minos. When everything looks hunky-dory,
yeah,
that's when you're about to be hit on the head with a stocking full of sand.
metaphors today. and prefiguring Milton's famous epic simile with the pilot.
Oh, of some small night-founded skiff deeming some island off to seaman tell with fixed anchor in his scaly rind.
That one.
Moors by his side under the lee. While night invests the sea in wished morned and haze.
Yes.
Wonderful stuff.
It is.
At last, when drunk with drowsiness he woke and saw his drover drive along the stream, he was dismayed, and thrice his breast he struck for marvel of that accident extreme. But when he saw that blazing beauty's beam, which with rare light his boat did beautify, he marvelled more, and thought he yet did dream, not well awaked, or that some ecstasy assorted had his sense, or dazed was his eye. So, ecstasy means temporary madness, from the Greek literally being outside yourself. Ecstasy.
Some people say he was beside himself.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're talking about. Yeah, exactly. Mm. It's as though the soul has kind of left the body, or the rational soul has left the body, so it's just kind of animal thing. Remember that Gertrude accuses Hamlet of ecstasy.
Oh, yeah.
When he sees the ghost.
Yeah.
Yes.
I remember a student asking about that.
Oh, right.
That it was an odd word.
What little pills is he carrying on him? But when her well advising, he perceived to be no vision, nor fantastic sight, great comfort of her presence he conceived, and felt in his old courage new delight to gin awake and stir his frozen sprite. And we kind of know what that means.
We sure do.
Yep. Though rudely asked her how she thither came, "Ah," said she, "father, I note read aright what hard misfortune brought me to the same. Yet am I glad that here I now in safety am." Mm. "But thou, good man, sith far in sea we be, and the great waters gin apace to swell, and probably more than that, that now no more we can the mainland see, have care, I pray, to guide the cockboat well." And, yeah, a cockboat is a small boat attached to a ship. I mean,
it's all there.
But yeah, yeah, exactly. Lest worse on sea than us on land befell. It's amazing. I mean, there are people who teach Spenser and seem to have no conception of his, what should we call it, his earthiness.
Really?
Yeah.
They just...
Well, an old colleague of mine, yes. Would have been horrified.
It's all dick jokes.
I know. We did an edition of a couple of Elizabethan texts together. We did editions.
Oh, I remember you saying that.
Yes, and he was always very uneasy when I offered to explain otherwise obscure, bawdy jokes.
He was just prudish?
Well, yeah, I think so. But we mustn't impose these standards on the past.
No. Jesus, no.
Thereat the old man did naught but fondly grin. Oh, incidentally, I picked up on the table out there.
Did you find? Has Patrick been in?
Filthy Shakespeare. I had a look at a few things. It's generally right about the stuff that people don't suspect. Oh, the cockboat, yes.
Yes.
Guide the cockboat well. Less on sea than us on land befell. So the whole thing is dripping with irony, if I can put it like that.
You did.
Thereat the old man did naught but fondly grin. And fondly foolish.
It's got a creepy vibe.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
Very creepy. Oh, God, okay. yes. And fondly meaning both foolishly and affectionately, but in a kind of, you know, the kind of affection you don't really want.
Ah.
Yes.
Yes.
The sort of dirty uncle grin. And said his boat the way could wisely tell. Oh, his boat knows where it's going. But his deceitful eyes did never cease to look on her fair face and mark her snowy skin. So, a bit of the old male gaze there. which you'd think she'd be used to and notice, but she's slow to catch on. Her innocence, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not, that's Flormel, isn't it? She's the icon of feminine innocence.
That's right.
Just wandering about the world getting preyed upon.
Exactly, exactly.
It just wants to go to the shops for a bobkin or something. A bobbin? A bobbin.
A bodkin? Well, a bodkin would be good. Actually, she could do with a bodkin here.
She could.
That's right. Yes, it's, a famous thing, gothic motif. Besieged.
The heroine in a diaphanous robe running.
Yes, exactly.
Candelabra.
Exactly, yes. That's right, hair flying. The sight whereof in his congealed flesh. Congealed here means frozen. You know, gelato.
Oh, yes, okay.
Infixed such secret sting of greedy lust. That the dry withered stock it gan refresh, and kindled heat that soon in flame forth brust, burst, in other words. So it's all a bit kind of unpleasant. The driest wood is soonest burnt to dust. Rudely to her he leapt. So not much in the way of overture.
Mem, would you maybe perhaps like to get a drink?
Exactly. And his rough hand, where ill became him, rashly would have thrust.
But all right, Trump.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but she with angry scorn him did withstand, and shamefully reproved for his rudeness fond. So she's sticking up for herself. She's no pushover for
which
an
hour.
Which is fair. Yeah, so absolutely fair. That's right. But he... Sorry, I'm just enjoying my muffin.
Thanks, Rowan.
But he, that never good nor manners knew, her sharp rebuke full little did esteem. Hardest to teach an old horse amble true. The inward smoke that did before but steam broke into open fire and rage extreme. And now his strength gan add unto his will. And will, of course, often means sexual desire.
Sure does.
Forcing to do that did him foul misseem. Yeah, well, absolutely. Beastly he threw her down, as Nicaea to spill her garments gay with scales of fish that all did fill, which is a curiously unpleasant detail, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
And that is the midpoint of the canto.
We have Flormel in distress.
In yes, dire straits.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We certainly do. The silly virgin. Silly means here blessed, of course. It's funny, isn't it, that the history of that word. The idea is that somebody who is holy and blessed is also kind of innocent, is therefore kind of innocent in the world, and therefore looks foolish. This is the central paradox behind the Encomium Moriae, Praise of Folly by Erasmus.
Nope. Sorry.
Well, it's a famous humanist text, and Shakespeare would have known it.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it's a satirical praise of folly. You know, folly is what does Swift call it? The pleasant state of being ignorant of vice or something. I've mucked that up. I can't think of it now. It's a shame. But the idea is that, you know, it's where ignorance is bliss, it's folly to be wise. You know, it's quite nice to be a fool playing in the sunshine and with your baubles and so on. But also there's a level above that where he says that Christianity is the biggest folly of all because it is self-sacrificing. And, you know, the reason of the world says, look out for number one, screw everybody else, the weakest goeth to the wall. But Christianity says,
give the suffering your shirt off your back.
And ultimately, if you're Christ, sacrifice yourself on a cross. So Christ is the biggest fool of all.
And that's a good thing for Erasmus, or is making fun
of it? He's making a crucial point, isn't he? He's making a point that ultimately Christianity is radically at odds
with reality.
With, yeah, well,
sorry.
Yeah, yeah, well, right. But also with the ordinary pursuit. You can't combine the two. You can't be sort of a ruthless businessman on the weekday and a church going.
And of course, Erasmus is around the rise of modern capitalism and so on, and Protestantism, which came together. Okay, so could we almost say that it contradicts human psychology? Would that be a fair way of putting it?
Well, yeah, you could say that, I think. That's what's so difficult, isn't it?
Christianity?
Yeah. Evolutionary psychology.
Yeah.
You know, if we didn't all have a lively interest in our own well-being and good, then the race would die out. And,
yeah.
If we're all hermits flagellating ourselves in monasteries and living on pulse.
Or living on a pole.
Or living on a pole in the desert, yes.
Or what's his face in his barrel?
Oh, Diogenes.
Yeah, Diogenes.
Yeah.
He keeps popping up in various places. Like, he was in Dante, he was in Gibbon.
Oh, he's
fascinating. I just read this book called Devil Land, which is 17th century England.
Oh, right.
And now I understand King James a lot more. Yeah.
Yes. No, he's a fascinating figure, Diogenes, in his lamp, looking for an honest man. Yeah. So, Spencer's aware of this too, in a sense, that it's absurd to, you know, there's a kind of absurdity in a nation, and all European nations did this, which is built upon foreign aggression, imperialism, enslaving people, on kind of ruthless capitalism. There were no bars or hindrances. To call that Christian is kind of insane.
It's like calling the Crusades Christian. Well, they
weren't
Christian.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. There's a lovely contrast between the way Defoe, who's rather complacent about these things, talks about imperialism, colonialism in the early 18th century as, you know, spreading the good to the natives, and, you know, benign. You think of a kind of benign relationship between Crusoe and Friday. Although the way he describes Friday is kind of highly eroticized, which is, I suppose, not surprising. He's been 18 years or something on an island on his own with a goat and a parrot.
If it moves.
Anyway, but then you've got this wonderful description in Gulliver's Travels of the colonial project as basically a form of piracy.
Well,
which is essentially what it was.
Pretty spot on.
State-approved piracy.
Mm.
And, you know, Swift has a much clearer sense of the incongruity between Christian professions and the way the world worked in early modern Europe. I don't know, Spencer's aware of it too. So, I'm not sure how we went on that journey.
We got there from Scilly.
Oh, Scilly! Yes, Scilly! That's right. So, Scilly's a lovely word because it means blessed and holy, and therefore a simpleton in the ways of the world. Your bank manager is unlikely to be silly, that is to say, holy and blessed.
Okay.
So, I mean, it leads to nice paradoxes, is what I'm saying. That's why I got onto it more.
It's all very interesting.
Just single words can send you off on little journeys. It's fascinating. Etymology is a fascinating study. Because it's the history of culture.
Humanity.
Well, yeah. That's right. So the silly virgin strove him to withstand. All that she might had him in vain reviled. And again, but she doesn't just rely on there's a do you know Volpone, the play by
well, you it's been a couple of years, but yes.
Well, you remember Celia,
mm-hmm.
and how her resistance to what really is an impending rape, only interrupted by a chap with a sword, is purely verbal, and it's kind of, you know, it's very passive, and I wish I could rend my beauty from my face, you know. And really, and the reason is he doesn't want
to disturb the balance of sympathy with the audience. If you really feel that Celia is in serious danger,
yes,
then the thing ceases to be a comedy. It turns into a kind of tragicomedy or something, you know. But that's kind of like the typical expectation.
That women would just lie there and go, please, no!
Yes, no. I couldn't possibly.
Yeah, whereas you'd shiv them if you got the chance.
Yeah, and the Florimel is much more proactive.
Yes, exercises agency.
She struggled strongly both with foot and hand. I like that. You know, this is not words. She's kicking him in the goolies,
mm-hmm.
we trust. Or what's left of them. To save her honour from that villain wild, and cry to heaven from human help exiled.
It really does prefigure the Gothic heroine.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they it's Protestant or something, or it's Radcliffe is always trying to show Protestantism as, you know, succeeding over the silly Catholics in France kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So the women always get out of there by virtue of their own, it's like a mix of their own faith and their own doing.
Ah,
and
right.
They manage to get out of these situations, but also a window was left open by God.
Yes.
And they're just smart enough to figure it out.
Right.
Yeah, it's similar. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. And cry to heaven from human help exiled. Oh, ye brave knights that boast this lady's love, where be ye now? She's nigh defiled, a filthy wretch.
I think Spencer knows what he's doing there. Showing us that knights really don't care.
Exactly.
No one came.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, but we've seen how brave knights actually do.
The same thing.
They snatch it. Yes, exactly. It's just they're less repulsive.
And I guess you're meant to think of Braggadocio just before grabbing the false Florimel.
And Ferrol, too.
Yeah.
Who grabs a bottle and a horse and rides off, you know.
Yeah.
Not so much as a by your leave, or could I take you to the next bus stop? You know?
Yeah, no? Would you mind?
Would you mind?
Please.
That's right.
Yes.
Exactly. And frankly, you know, putting her over his horse is like popping her in the boot of the car. It's not very dignified or...
No, it was. The car would be more comfortable.
Exactly.
At least then you could punch out the taillight and wave for help.
That's right. Yes, oh ye brave knights, boast this lady's love. Where be ye now when she's nigh defiled, a filthy wretch? Well may she you reprove of falsehood or of sloth, and most it may behove. But if that thou, Sir Saturan, did weet, or thou, Sir Peridure, her sorry state. Sir Peridure is not something we come into later on. Peridure would mean something like capable of enduring, perdurable.
I feel like that.
Yes.
On the end of that.
Yes. How soon would ye assemble many a fleet to fetch from sea that ye had land lost late? But again, casting her as property that's been lost. And of course the illusion is fairly obviously do.
It's there.
Well, the Trojan War.
Oh, Helen.
Yeah, putting a fleet together is what is, you know...
Of course.
Yeah. But again, Helen construed as property.
Yeah.
She was Menelaus's, and Paris has snatched her. And she's had no agency, it seems, in this whole process.
Until it behooves the storyteller to suggest that she was some sort of whore that ran off with Paris.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
It's whoever benefits from the...
But basically she can't win.
No. Poor Helen.
That's right. To fetch from sea that ye had land lost late, towers, cities, kingdoms ye would ruinate in your avengement and dispiteous rage. And again, an allusion to Troy.
Mm-hmm.
Was this the face that launched 1,000 ships and burnt the topless towers of Ilium?
I knew that one. I mean, it's the famous one.
It's the famous one. It's good stuff, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
If only Marlowe had lived, what would he have been writing in the 1610s or 20s, you know?
If only Milton had kept his eyes.
Well, I know. So many.
Yes.
Literary history is whole series of what ifs. What if the Library of Alexandria hadn't burnt down? You know, what if?
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Well, the great irony that we lost so much to time, so much valuable stuff, and now everything is preserved on computers, and so much of it is absolute shite.
Exactly.
Think about this every day.
Episodes of Big Brother will be preserved where great epic poems.
We have one Beowulf to work off. One.
Totally preserved by chance on one manuscript, which is basically a collection of manuscripts about monsters. So it's not there for the literary value. Which almost burnt to a crisp in the fire of Ashburnham House.
That's right.
Yeah.
You want to take a photocopier back and you want to go to Doctor Who and say, here, this, right. I need you to...
That's exactly right, yes.
Mm.
Just the camera.
Yeah. That's been what's funny about X-Files. None of the episodes would work today because modern technology would immediately get... It's like, you don't need to be there, Mulder.
99% of plots wouldn't work.
Funny.
Hello, Adam. There's this snake and he's offering me this fruit. What do you think I should do?
Well, they could just text each other rather than run around being like, Mulder, where are you? And it's like... It's very funny. Because it was 93 and I was born 95.
Oh.
Yeah.
I still think of it as a modern show. I know.
I'm waiting for it to sort of catch up with the times, but or even, they've got a NASA episode, and you can see they've got state-of-the-art technology, and it's like, I have that at work. I have that headpiece at work. Anyway.
However, it's very up-to-date in that, of course, the credulous one is the man, and the sternly rational skeptic is the woman.
Yes. Scully.
Scully.
I love her.
Who never smiles. Again, it was a sort of.
It's like we're doing early modern feminism, aren't we? It's
and like, smiling is like a betrayal of the sisterhood.
Would have undermined her.
Yeah.
Early third wave.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. That's what it is. It's very interesting for the place of culture.
It has been interesting to be like, all right, you're a feminist icon. How are we doing this? Yes. Anyway, this is not relevant. Mm. But I'm having a nice
time. It's not. Well, it isn't, it isn't. I mean, because, you know, Florimel is a bit of a feminist icon here. I mean, much more so than your traditional threatened...
Celia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Towns, cities, kingdoms ye would ruinate in your avengement and despiteous rage. That line incidentally moves a little bit like Milton's repeated line, thrones, dominations, princedoms, virtues,
which
powers.
Both God and Satan have a version of.
And of course that's an allusion to Homer again, because Homer does actually repeat lines in different contexts. Nor aught your burning fury might abate, but if Sir Calidor could it presage, no living creature could his cruelty assuage. So that's interesting, of course. Calidor's a real chap, well, real in the fiction, who you won't meet for another couple of books.
I was going to say, what's he doing here?
Yes, exactly. Well, and also, he's the Knight of Courtesy.
Oh, of course, that's right.
So it does seem a bit odd. Calidor can mean, it can mean beautiful gift.
That's, yeah.
Kalon Doron in Greek. But it can also be Calidus, Latin, meaning fierce or cruel. And that's actually a kind of an interesting ambiguity, because in a sense his defense of courtesy must be aggressive. You can't defend courtesy by being wishy-washy and after you, Cyril. No, Claude, after you. You know, you've got to go in there with your sword and hack
and bash
naughty men about.
Yes.
So
foreshadowing.
Well, yeah, because, you know, courtesy means that if a woman is being raped, you want to intervene.
You step in.
I mean, that's a kind of very minimum courtesy, isn't it? You know?
I would say so.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he'd be stepping in big time.
All these knights suffering the bystander effects just standing in the building.
<That's right.
laughs> Help! Oh!
Somebody else can do it. But sith that none of all her knights is nigh, see, I like the way they're her knights. See how the heavens of voluntary grace and sovereign favour toward chastity do succour send to her distressed case. So, again,
what looks like blind fortune avenging on her and so on is revealed now as grace.
Providence. Yeah.
Providence.
Someone left a window open. It was God.
He's right. And of course, this is also the power of chastity that Milton writes about in Cone.
Yeah, okay.
The mystical power of chastity. Rubies. You know rubies? A virtuous woman is above rubies.
Oh, yeah.
If you wear rubies on your person, they're a talisman that preserves virginity.
Bit like...
Yes, I would say so.
Okay. And this is how they sold it as well. They said, oh, you have magic powers if you save it. Okay.
I suppose so. Hmm. I suppose so, yeah. So much high God doth innocence embrace. It fortunate. Well, and then, isn't it funny? He slides immediately to it fortunate, which is absolutely signalling with flashing neon lights that fortune doesn't exist in this poem. It's a world of providence. It fortunate, while thus she stiffly strove, and the wide sea importunate long space with shrilling shrieks, Proteus abroad did rove upon the foamy waves, driving his finny drove. So Proteus, the sea god.
With his dolphins.
Yes.
Aquaman.
He pops up here and there in the poem, interestingly. He's, of course, a famous shapeshifter. He's a child of Neptune, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So he's a god. Proteus is shepherd of the seas of yore, and hath the charge of Neptune's mighty herd. An aged sire with head all frory hoar and sprinkled frost upon his dewy beard. Another old man, who when these pitiful outcries he heard, through all the sea so ruefully resound, his chariot swift in hasty thither steered, which with a team of scaly focus bound was drawn upon the waves that foamed him around. Focus are...
Orcas?
Yes, that's right, yes. And it's a rather nice picture. It's lovely pictorial writing, a lovely bit of ekphrasis. You could almost see that done by Botticelli or somebody.
Yes. and a kind of pastoral of the sea.
Yeah, well, there's a word for that. Yes, piscatorial eclogues.
Oh, of course there's a word for that. Yes. Fishy eclogues.
Yes, fishy eclogues. People started writing them in the 16th, 17th century because, you know, shepherds get boring. Let's have fishermen. Although it doesn't make sense because shepherds are chosen for pastoral because they don't seem to do any work. They just sit about all day playing their pipes and, you know, exchanging cheeses and writing songs to their mistresses.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, shepherds do work,
fair bit of work.
But it's kind of invisible.
Mm.
But fishermen, it's a pretty strenuous activity.
Yeah.
So it's an odd choice.
Again, it's like Grey, you know, idealising the poor, fetishising the poor.
Yeah.
Analogy. I guess it's the same thing. They idealise the work.
That's right. And you don't see the labour. The labour, yeah, as you say, it's fetishised in a Marxist sense.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Ah, whoops. Accidentally did class commentary, didn't mean to when I taught that.
But yeah, that's so true. Yes, and sentimentalised.
Mm.
Mm. If they just sit about on the beach mending their nets, that's fairly...
Yeah, vibing. Mm.
But also, of course, there's another... I mean, you know, the shepherd is Christ. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want.
And he did
and,
the thing
and the
with
very
the
word
fish.
Pastor. Pastor means pastoral. It means a feeder.
Yeah.
The pastor of your church feeds you with spiritual food.
Num-nums.
Yes, exactly. Not as nice as these Rollins delicious muffins. Brown... Yes, my muffins. Exactly. Follow me, and I shall make you fishers of men.
Ah, yeah.
So...
Christy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And, of course, was not the, you know, the emblem of Christianity in ancient times the fish?
Yeah.
It's because it spells...
Yeah,
Jesus. Yeah, Jesus... Well... No, that's Latin.
Ah.
The Greek for Jesus Christ, King of the Jews.
Ah.
Spells the word piscis.
Pisces.
Yeah, all that.
Sorry.
And Howard, this is irrelevant.
I just love that they make these connections.
Oh, I know.
It's like a first year lit essay. It's word association.
Well, it is. And of course, Spencer does it a lot. But you remember the theory about language is that God guarantees human language as a necessary fit between symbol and object. And, you know, we abandoned that belief in the early 18th century with Locke and people like that. But they believed it. Not a belief in. Yeah, when he says ravens taught to abstain, though ravenous, from what they brought when they're feeding Elisha, that to us looks like a
cheap pun.
Oh, awful. But if it is of the very nature of a raven to be ravenous, hence that's why it's called a raven, and not the other way around, makes sense. It's a miracle.
A miracle.
Yeah.
Language is a miracle.
It is. Oh, the Greek for fish is ichthus. And that's Jesus Christos.
I'm rolling my eyes.
And so the whole thing spells Jesus Christ, King of the Jews.
King of the Jews.
Yeah.
King of the Jews.
Yes. So that was a little, but you can't help having little detours because this poem
makes it good too.
Yeah. I've lost.
Piscatorial ecologist.
Oh, yes, 31.
Yes,
31. And coming to that fish's wandering boat that went at will,
mm-hmm.
You know what that means, without a card and a sail, but it also means it's not guided by grace, it's guided by merely human will. And will, of course, is always to ill, as Spencer tells us again and again, opposition between will and grace, basically.
Yeah.
An aged sire with head all frawdy hoar and sprinkled frost upon his dewy beard. Oh, no, we've got that. Sorry. He therein saw that irksome sight which smote deep indignation and compassion frail into his heart at once. Deep indignation and compassion. A compassion. That sounds nice. He's got compassion for the poor beleaguered.
But no, they're saying his compassion is frail.
Well, compassion could also just mean passion, you see. So it's a nice ambiguity on Spencer's part. We think it's a genuine binding emotion going forth from him. But in fact, it's just fancies it for himself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll put it bluntly, into his heart at once. And of course, in fact, this is the age-old mechanism we've been talking about ad nauseam, of frustrated desire, concupiscence turning into
rage,
irascibility. Yeah. Concupiscibility leads to irascibility when thwarted. Straight did he hail the greedy villain from his hoped prey, of which he now, hail means haul, grab. So again, no ceremony.
Fabulous
here.
Cartoon.
Yes.
Man comes in on dolphin backs.
That's right.
Jumps off. Rolls right. Him off.
No, he's on his chariot is drawn by them.
I like the idea of him riding.
Hey, ho, Silver. You wouldn't recognise that, would you? That's a catchphrase from a thing called the Lone Ranger.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, vaguely.
Various things like... Well, to my colonialism... The Indian guide is called Tonto, which means foolish in Spanish. And he calls the Lone Ranger Quimo Sabe, which is a sort of corruption of Quien Sabe, which is Spanish for he who knows.
Yeah.
And the catch, who was, as he rides away at the end, they all say, who was that masked man? Which he now did very little fail, and with his staff that drives his herd astray, him beat so sore that life and sense did much dismay. Okay. The whiles the piteous lady up did rise, ruffled and foully rayed, with filthy soil, and fish, let's not forget, and blubbered face with tears of her fair eyes, her heart nigh broken was with weary toil to save herself from that outrageous spoil. Spoil here meaning plunder.
Her being spoiled, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, and also like the spoil of a... an attack or a raid.
Oh.
Stuff you carry home in your saddlebags. But when she looked up to weet what white at her from so inf... Oh, you've got to say infamous fact, a soil, that's interesting. For shame, but more for fear of his grim sight, down in her lap she hid her face and loudly shrieked. So it's not a nice, handsome knight, it's elderly Phoebus.
Proteus,
yes. Herself not savoured yet from danger dread, she thought. Well, she thought right. But changed from one to other fear, like as a fearful partridge that has fled from the sharp hawk which had attached near and falls to ground to seek for succour there, whereas the hungry spaniels she does spy, with greedy jaws her ready for to tear. In such distress and sad perplexity was Florimel when Proteus she did see thereby. So another little epic simile, a rather odd one. Spaniels?
Hunting dogs?
Well, yes, they are, but they're a very specialised kind of hunting dog, and their function is exactly not...
Oh, you go pick up the duck.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, don't eat it.
Don't touch it, don't bite it, yeah.
Just collect.
Trained.
Yeah.
So, in fact...
That's me as a child.
It's quite interesting, isn't it, that this is a misunderstanding, or... Because, or were spaniels not trained that way in the 16th century? I don't think that could be right.
Were they more hungry?
Well, there's a couple of different
points. Or is the point that it's doing what it's not meant to be doing there? Sorry, couplet from Pope.
Oh, yeah. He says, so well-bred spaniels civilly delight in mumbling of the game they dare not bite.
Is that from the Danceid?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah,
I think it is. Yeah. It's a great couplet, and it shows that, you know, only 100 years later, it's clearly understood that spaniels don't bite, they carry the stuff back to their master.
Yeah.
Mm. So that's actually quite interesting, isn't it? He could have chosen a thousand dogs.
Yeah. Or just dog.
Or just dog.
I mean, it wouldn't have scanned. Doggy.
Doggy, yes, exactly. I mean, in a sense, her perception is correct.
Is the point that it's hungry, so it's acting in a way, you know, that it wasn't trained.
Oh. The hungry spaniels, yeah, maybe. That's interesting.
With greedy jaws, you know. For her to so it could be the savage hunting dog or, you know, whatever it is, but it's denying its training or what it's meant to do.
So, in a sense, her kind of exceptional beauty and so on provokes predatory male desire, even where it might not normally be.
Yeah.
Something like that. So it's dangerous, basically. She needs to go around with an armed guard. Sed quis custodiet ipsos custodes?
Slept like 2 hours. You're going to have to.
Who shall guard the guardians? This is Juvenal from the Sixth Satire. He's talking about you can set a guard on a watch on your wife, but who's going to watch the watcher? You know, he might be rogering her.
So suspicious, Juvenal.
Juvenal's a mad misogynist. Oh, he's
yeah.
Just
that I have learnt just from little lines. Oh,
right. He's off the scale.
Yeah, yeah. And he wasn't representative of his time, though, was he?
No. I don't think so. No.
It's just the truth.
I mean, Roman culture, of course, is strongly patriarchal.
But not misogynistic, necessarily. Maybe. Like, there is a difference that people tend to forget.
There is a difference.
Yeah.
If you read Horace's kind of triumphal ode on the defeat of Cleopatra, who was a contemporary of course, it's quite interesting. What? Oh.
Contemporary of his. I'm like...
Yes, I know. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it celebrates the fact that a great enemy of Rome has been defeated. But it's sort of admiring her...
As worthy of being defeated?
Yeah, as a warrior. So, as a kind of quasi-man.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of praise of Elizabeth has this weird...
Yeah. The heart and stomach of a king...
Exactly.
King of England.
Exactly. But he endeavoured, with speeches mild, her to comfort and courage bold. Well, to step up from the fisherman.
Poor Flormel.
Poor, yes, I know. Bidding her fear no more her foeman viled, nor doubt himself, and who he was her told. Yet all that could not from affright her hold, nor to recomfort her at all prevail. Well, hardly surprising. For her faint heart was with the frozen cold benumbed so inly, that her wits nigh failed, and all her senses with abashment quite were quailed. So, I mean, you know, you can understand that she's not likely to invest trust in random strangers, or strange men, shall we say. Her up betwixt his rugged hands he reared, and with his frozen, frory lips, it means cold, full softly kissed. Well, that's a bit forward.
It is.
It is true that men and women socially kissing was much more common in England than on the continent. And
that's so funny because it swapped, and now English people are so funny.
I know. But continental visitors were often slightly scandalised, by the way.
That's very funny.
Men and women were kissed on greeting or parting.
Like, just pecks on the cheek?
Oh, I don't think there's any tongue involved.
Okay.
While the cold icicles from his rough beard drop it down upon her ivory breast. It's a curious detail, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Yet he himself so busily addressed that out of her astonishment he wrought, and out of that same fish's filthy nest removing her into his chariot. Removing her again like a piece of furniture. So, there are different ways you could do this. You could do it roughly, or you can do it politely, but you're still treating her as an object.
I wonder if you went through and looked at all of the verbs.
Yes.
For her getting moved about.
That's right. Like a piano. Into his chariot brought, and there with many gentle terms her fair besought. But that old lecher, which was... Well, yeah, fair enough, but, you know, it's... He's been coming to look like an old lecher himself.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that old lecher, which with bold assault that beauty durst presume to violate... And, of course, violate, one of the original meanings of violate is exactly rape.
Rape, yeah.
Whereas rape originally meant just seize, kidnap.
Take, yeah.
Mm, take. Violare. He cast to punish for his heinous fault, then took he him yet trembling sith of late, and tied behind his chariot to a great the virgin, whom he had abused so sore. So tying someone behind your chariot is a pretty violent punishment.
Well, that's Hector.
Well.
I'll get there.
Yeah.
What Achilles did to Hector.
Yes, that's right. Thrice fugitive about Troy walls.
Yeah.
Yes. That's right. And, it, you know, if the chariot's going fast enough, then you're dragged along. So dragged him through the waves in scornful state, and after cast him up upon the shore. But Florimel with him unto his bower he bore. So he does it to please Florimel. It's not clear whether she's pleased by this or not.
Well, she's still in a fit.
Well, that's
she's
true.
Swooned.
She's swooned.
Swound.
Yes. Swound. It's a wonderful word, isn't it? Swound.
Poor thing.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. His bower is in the bottom of the main, under a mighty rock, against which do rave the roaring billows in their proud disdain, that with the angry working of the wave, therein is eaten out an hollow cave. It seems rough mason's hand with engines keen, and long while laboured it to engrave. So it's a work of nature, but it's an underwater cave, a bit like Grendel's mother, interestingly. I doubt Spencer knew about Grendel's mother. There was his one, the living wight was seen on his dwelling, save one old nymph, hight Pomp, to keep it clean. Penelope, sorry. Hight Penelope to keep it clean. I might just put the light on. Thither he brought the sorry Florimel, and entertained her the best he might. And Penelope her entertained eke well, and as an immortal might a mortal wight. To win her liking unto his delight. So she's a nymph, she's a sea nymph.
With flattering words, he sweetly wooed her and offered fair gifts to allure her sight. Yeah.
It's just another version of manipulation.
I know. It's just a little more courtly and civilized.
Coercive.
And coercive, that's right. That's right. And this is not what courtesy is all about. You know, we had this brief mention of
Sir Calidor.
And it's not inappropriate here, because rough fisherman Curtius Proteus. But no, they're after the same thing, basically.
Oh yes.
Different men means of getting there. With flattering words he sweetly wooed her and offered fair gifts to allure her sight. But she both offers in the offerer disdained.
Despised,
and all the fawning of the flatterer.
No, thank you. Could I go up to the surface again, please?
Exactly, yes. I've got an appointment.
I want to be free. You didn't ask me.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Notice the nice enjambment?
Offer
despised, yes. It's a short enjambment, and short enjambments are always more violent than... If it goes to four syllables, then we reinterpret it as a caesura, which, is, of course, is a kind of stabilising device. If it's shorter than that, it really kind of jars. It wakes us up, makes us pay attention. Mm. This is what I'm talking about in Oslo. You see, poetry and attention. Enjambment. Be fun. Fun, fun, fun.
Exciting. What's the conference?
Well, it's called Poetry and Attention.
Okay.
Yeah. So I couldn't.
Is it like the Shakespeare Society or the...
Oh, well, it's a combination of the International Society for the Lyric and Oslo University Linguistics Department.
It's going to be a good time. You've got your people.
Absolutely.
You owe me your people.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah, very nice.
Daily he tempted her with this or that. I like that.
And it's almost like he's not properly trying. He's just like, gold bauble, silver bauble,
that's
chocolate,
right. That's right.
Donkey. What do you like?
Going to find the sweet spot sooner or later.
It's not like he treats her like a human, finding out what she likes, and then genuinely courts her.
Exactly. 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 Although even that can be a bit creepy. I mean, I'm just thinking of...
It would be a step up.
Yes. You know, No. Groundhog Day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Phil.
Yeah, Phil, who spends hundreds of years trying to find out what she likes. And, you know,
really?
French poetry.
He's so ineffective.
Yes, I know.
He's terrible.
Because, he's so transparent.
Yeah.
But it's all about this kind of Buddhist thing of, you know, reincarnation and learning
until
and growing.
Until you figure it out.
Yeah, until you figure it out. It's a fun film.
Have you seen the musical?
No.
Tim Minchin does it.
Oh, really?
He's my boy. It's good.
Oh, good. Mm. Yes, he had some words to say about Pell, didn't he?
Oh, yes. And in the Pope song?
So daily he tempted her with this or that, and never suffered her to be at rest.
Every woman on earth knows what this feels like.
And if that doesn't rhyme with pest, I'll be disappointed.
Yeah, it doesn't.
No. But evermore she him refuse it flat. Now, you see, she's not being coy. She's not saying, it's kind of nice, but I'd prefer daffodils to roses. She's refusing flat. She's saying,
no, thank you.
Yes.
Not
Nick off, Jack.
Yeah. Blocked.
Yeah, blocked. Take your cockboat somewhere else. And all his feigned kindness did detest. So firmly she had sealed up her breast. Sometimes he boasted that a god he hight, but she a mortal creature loved best. Then he would make himself a mortal wight. Because he's a shapeshifter, of course.
Oh, that's right.
And, of course, the other notable shapeshifter in the poem...
Archimago.
So it's not good, shapeshifting.
Well, not, yeah.
No. I mean, angels can do it, of course, as Milton tells us.
They can... either shape or substance, assume.
Well, I mean, yeah, but, I mean, you know, look at Satan. He can become a frog, a toad, a snake.
Yeah, a cormorant.
A cormorant, yeah.
Although I always wonder when the difference between simile and metaphor or actual genuine shape-shifting, because, like, sat like a toad at the ear of it. Squat like a toad. It's like, is he a toad or is he squat like a toad?
Well, he must be toad-sized, mustn't he?
I mean, you could get down to someone's ear. And it's sat like a cormorant.
Yes, you're quite right.
This is a question I've had actually for you for a long time that I just forget when I'm sat in front of you.
That's very interesting, isn't it? We always take it to be able to shape-shifting.
Yeah, I wrote them all down once when I was looking.
Mm.
I can't remember what I was doing with it. Something to do with the sublime, anyway. But yeah, there's some where he genuinely is transformed. Sometimes he's subject of an epic simile, and then sometimes it's just a simile.
Yeah, let's go back and have a look at that.
Because there's like, you know, he becomes the cherub to get through. And that's transformation.
He's basically a spy in foreign territory, and so he needs to be disguised. And so maybe sitting as, you know, Satan in all his diabolic glory with horns and hoofs in a tree would be a bit...
But we know that they're not really looking very hard.
Not expecting to see.
Oh, and is the point more the way that he's like a cormorant, right? The point is he is set like that, you know, gazing, I want...
Well, yeah,
that's the point. There's no transformation, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I think like it. Yes, you're quite right. I must go back and look at that.
Because around us, it's cormorant, toad,
snake.
He becomes fog. It's not like fog. He transforms.
That's right.
Obviously, snake is a transformation.
Yeah.
And the cherub is...
Although, surely the snake already exists and he merely kind of takes it over like a zombie.
Well, that's ambiguous as well, though, isn't it?
Mm, I suppose so.
He just transforms. Does he see a snake and...
Well,
no, because he's sat there and he's trying to figure out which one...
Yes, to enter.
Enter or assume? And then...
I have to go back and look at all these instances. It's interesting. Yeah.
And then what are the implications? Is there really anything, or am I overthinking?
Well, I think it's fascinating, actually. It's an interesting question.
Because I think the argument I was making was that as he gets more and more diabolic, so do his transformations.
Mm.
You know, he enters Eden with a plan, but then the plan becomes real, and... snake.
Well, he ends up, of course, becoming a snake against his will.
Yes.
Which is a sort of allegory of sin. You choose sin, but then sin chooses you.
It's the contrapasso.
Exactly. Exactly.
The monkey learns. The very tired monkey learns.
Then she said she loved none but a fairy knight. And that's interestingly awkward line, because...
But if she loved none.
Yes. Well, because...
You don't need the comma? She loved none, but a fairy knight.
Well, no. It's not the comma that's the problem. The problem is the beat on loved, because it's next door to and therefore subordinated to none. So loved none, and yet has to carry a beat. Not only that, but we have to separate them with a silent beat between.
Loved.
So that loved none, but a fairy knight. It's so it suggests somebody's speaking with difficulty or awkwardness, or which I suppose would be probably the situation. Despised and all the fawning of the flatterer with previously, you can see there's a point for the silent beat between fawning and of, and it's relatively straightforward line. Actually, he said, there's something here. These Alexandrines get more complicated as the poem proceeds.
Well, I guess he's getting better, isn't he?
Yeah.
And you'd get bored. You'd want to play with things.
Oh, now here's absolutely classic one at the end of stanza 30. Was drawn upon the waves that foamed him around. Those nice silent beats. But very often he makes it just a little bit more difficult to find that fourth beat, that rest between the halves. The hemistichs, as we call them. And here, it's tricky. It's really tricky. As of somebody speaking hesitantly, awkwardly, uncomfortably.
Like she doesn't want to tell him.
Well, or maybe she's telling a porky, isn't she? And, you know, this would be...
Yeah, anything to get...
I know.
I only love pigs. Yes, he's like, I'll do it.
That's right. Exactly, yes. Yeah, you can't win with that one, can you?
Cause... Yeah, because it's Proteus.
Yes.
He'll do whatever it takes.
Yeah. But that could be it, in a way. You know, and there's this whole question of lying and equivocation and intention and Ophelia. We talked about this in some context with Dante. You know.
Was it Paolo and Francesca?
Maybe. You know, Hamlet, you know, aggressively says, "Where's your father?" in that scene. And he, this madman is asking him where her father is. He's clearly kind of a bit of homicidal. In fact, does it by killing her father.
Sure does.
So she says, "At home, my lord." And it's an equivocation because, of course, he is at home because Elsinore, the castle, is his home.
Mm.
But she makes it sound, if we interpret her in terms of relevance, it sounds as though she's saying...
Away.
He's in his... Well, he's in... No, he's in his chambers, you know.
Ah, yeah.
The other end of the castle.
Yeah. When he's there.
Gricean... We talk about Gricean. Yeah. So to interpret her words as being relevant as an answer to what he asked her, he must assume, if he's going to be cooperative, that Polonius is hanging around.
The other person has to be cooperative.
Oh, yeah.
Customers?
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah. That's the whole thing.
Go out of their way to misinterpret, in fact.
Yeah, of course.
Interesting.
Yeah. But it depends on cooperation. And, of course, if you're not cooperating, you can misuse it to deceive people.
Equivocation, yeah. Mm. Well, the witches.
The witches.
Macbeth, yeah.
Yeah.
Because
they know he'll choose the self-serving interpretation. So in a sense, he's kind of guilty of mischoosing.
And then importantly, Lady Macbeth interprets it as fate. Fate and metaphysical aid.
Yes.
Like they choose how they're going to...
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know weird sisters, but they're also witchy. That's the point, right? It's all of the above.
strains of witch in there, definitely.
Appeals to all layers of the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Absolutamente. Then, like a fairy knight himself, he dressed, for every shape on him he could endue. Then, like a king, he was to her expressed, and offered kingdoms unto her in view. To be his lemon and his lady true.
Lululemon's lozzle? We haven't had that yet, have we?
No, we haven't.
No.
Good one. Yes. But the lemon, of course, is just a lover. Whether you can be his lemon and his lady true, lemon suggests something like concubine, doesn't it?
Yeah, paramour.
Paramour, yes.
Yeah.
Paramour is a lovely word. but when all this he nothing saw prevail, with harder means he cast her to subdue. And with sharp threats her often did assail, so thinking for to make her stubborn courage quail. So now the Archimago sign is coming out a bit. It's interesting, isn't it? Her stubborn courage quail. He's thinking to make it, but it doesn't work. She has this kind of inner agency which allows her to resist. A bit like the lady in Cobus, of course.
Chastity.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
It is empowering them.
It's empowering them, yeah.
Secret female something.
Yeah, exactly.
Feminism.
Yes, that's exactly right.
It is funny how their interpretation of chastity was an early kind of version of feminism, like female empowerment. It's interesting how it all comes around.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, that allegorically... these episodes point to the fact that her love for Marinel necessarily exposes her to sexual desire. To, you know, which normally in romance these things are kept completely distinct. So it's only base peasants who feel lust, you know, whereas the noble lady and the knight feel
I'm married and have a nice dinner and curtains close.
Well, yeah, or they feel this kind of high spiritual, you know, love,
yes,
which floats above the sort of murky areas of
sexuality,
you know, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I like that.
Mm. So you know, it's she's got to cope with it like any other human being. Basically, so it's assailing her inwardly. Stanza 41: to dreadful shapes he did himself transform. Now like a giant, now like to a fiend. Then like a centaur, then like to a storm raging.
What woman?
Yes.
Sorry, go on.
Well, this is passion. This is what you have to deal with.
Ugh.
Exactly. Thereto who weaned her will to win unto his wished end. But when with fear, nor favour, nor with all he else could do, he saw himself esteemed.
down in a dungeon deep he let her fall, and threatened there to make her his eternal thrall.
Beauty and the Beast.
Well, it's an old topos, isn't it?
Tale as old as time.
That's right, and it occurs more than once in this poem.
Yeah.
And in fact, he keeps her 7 months in the dungeon, just like Amoret in the Castle of Busuray. Yeah. So they're kind of playing over the same thing in a way. Except that's more to do with kind of courtly love and its corruptions.
And there you have your gothic villain.
Oh, absolutely. Twirling his mustachios.
Mm.
Well, actually,
and overcome with passion and feeling in a way that which he can't control, which is Manfred's whole problem. And in the unit I just taught, we talk about it being kind of a, you know, the development. You get the man of feeling who has feelings.
Mm, yes.
You get to Manfred.
Which are good and moral.
Yeah.
And uplifting.
However, whatever trouble they get you into. to Manfred and Otranto, who has all these feelings and they're just completely uncaged and run away with him, and it turns him into like a monster. This is a couple hundred years before that.
It is, but again, you know, the way great poets see into the future is...
Yeah, there's just a problem then with using in that unit talking about it being a development. Like, it shows that the trope was floating.
It was floating, but it
hadn't consolidated?
It has to take root.
In a gothic villain.
And blossom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly...
So if I ever do get to write a book about heroic archetypes, character archetypes...
Yeah.
Spencer. Responsible for so much.
But it's interesting, because it's the Enlightenment that says, look, all this stuff about sin, and every kind of passion is in fact a gateway to sin, is nonsense, because humans are rationally designed creatures and passions are merely engines that motivate them in various ways.
Yeah.
And indeed, some of those can be good.
Yeah.
If it's your yearning heart for suffering mankind, that's a good passion to be driven by. But then the wrenches come back and say, but
by the end of the century,
we're back to the dark stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Very interesting. Oh, and also, of course, we are reminded, are we not, of Persephone, Proserpina.
Ah, yes, of course.
Yes. Gloomy Disc gathers her, a bit like an object.
Yeah.
By Gloomy
Disc.
Yes, look at her. That's right. And she has to spend 6 months underground and 6 months on top.
Which is close enough to seven.
Yeah. Eternal thraldom was to her more leaf than loss of chastity or change of love. So,
okay, honey.
Yeah.
If you think so.
Yeah, well, but she's, you know, this kind of nobility. Die had she rather in tormenting grief than any should of falseness or reproof or looseness that she lightly did remove. Most virtuous virgin, glory be thy meed, and crown of heavenly praise with saints above, where most sweet hymns of this my famous deed are still amongst them sung, though far my rhymes exceed. So the angels are still praising her in heaven. Not much of a consolation prize, though, is it?
No!
No.
Although, now that I've seen what they thought hell might be...
Fit song of angels, caroled to be, but yet what so my feeble muse can frame shall be to advance thy goodly chastity, and to enroll thy memorable name in the heart of every honourable dame, that they thy virtuous deeds may imitate and be partakers of thy endless fame. Folks may leave thee in this woeful state to tell of Saturnine, where I am left of late. And then we got our plates spinning, or back in another spinning plate. Of Montrelasmo.
I need some music from a soap opera or something where they transition back to the farm. That's right.
So we've seen the virgin tied to the railway tracks and the villain twirling his moustaches.
Yeah, bold and beautiful. Something.
It is interesting, isn't it, that one of the ways Shakespeare works, one of the ways Spencer works is by this incremental repetition.
Pedagogy.
Well, yeah, but, you know, he takes
a scene and then repeats the scene later, but with important changes that extend its meaning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with the whole attempted rape of Una and, you know, episode with Duessa and so on. So many of these things. Or indeed, you know, the Garden of Madonis is a kind of rerun of the Bower of Bliss, mm. as it ought to be, something mm. like that. But here, you know, we've got Proteus imprisoning Florimel, and then we see it echoed again in Bossuet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, Bossuet
yeah.
imprisoning, but also Radigan.
Yeah, yeah,
it's another. Well, it's another turn on the thing,
yeah.
deliberately reflecting the past. That's why you've got to read this poem from go to woe.
Yeah.
You can't just dip into it like a basket of flowers or a box of chocolates, like the Romantics sometimes did. Mm. You know, people like Lamb and I'm not talking
Aspilus
about.
Or
yeah, that's right. It's got to be read from beginning to end because it's a process unfolding in the mind. And here, we've got the difference then between just basically animal lust is what's driving Proteus,
mm.
compared to the much more complex thing that's going on with Bathurin, which is all about the kind of perversions and distortions of romantic love, courtly love, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And all the...
socialization?
Yeah.
Of sexuality
exactly.
and relationships.
Exactly. And weird stuff that leads you into, you know, perversions, should
yeah.
I say.
Kinks. Let's
kinks.
Not
go. Paraphilias, as Freud would say.
Ah.
Hmm. Which the Romantics are kind of aware of, aren't they, in a way that... Yes, there's a book here, of course, that's somebody's written it. So we're now going to tell of Saturnine, where I am left of late. Stanza 44. So we've left Florimel in her dungeon. She's not having a good day, is she?
I mean, Florimel,
yes.
Worst day ever.
Exactly. Who, having ended with that squire of dames a long discourse of his adventures vain, the which himself then ladies more defames, and finding not the hymn, finding not the hyena to be slain, that same squire returned back again to the first way. So he's finished his chat with the squire dames, interestingly, which defames him more than the ladies. That's an interesting point of view, isn't it? That's not Eddie's point of view. It wouldn't be. It's not the kind of sneering gentleman's club kind of view of the story.
Yeah, that's Spencer.
Mm. And finding not the hyena to be slain, which I take it is Argante, isn't it? She'd been called a hyena before.
Mm-hmm.
Because of its...
hermaphroditic qualities?
Well, I was going to say grossly apparent sexual dimorphism.
Potato, potato.
<That's right. laughs> And as they forward went, stanza 44, they spied a knight far pricking on the plain. they love their pricking, these knights. As if he were to some adventure bent, and in his port appeared manly hardiman.
Do not trust.
Yes.
Warn, danger, Will Robinson.
That's right. So Saturnine him toward did address, to weet what wight he was, and what his quest.
At least they didn't run at each other with their swords.
I know.
That's pretty impressive.
It
That's
got
to be the only example.
It is, but why does he have to know who he is and where, what he's bound on? You know, like a sort of officious policeman.
I guess they saw each other's...
I suppose. Maybe he might join him on his quest.
Coat of arms.
If it's a good quest.
Yeah.
You know.
When I see another PhD student, I say, hello, who
yes,
are you? What's your thing?
What's your thesis? Yes. You can get a t-shirt that says, don't ask me about my thesis. So Saturnine him toward did address, to weep what he was and what his quest. And coming nigh, eftsoons he gan to guess, both by the burning heart, which on his breast he bore, and by the colours in his crest, but paradel it was.
Gets out his book of coats of arms.
That's right, yes. That's
oh, right. You've got the fish and the monkey. Right.
Well, now you could look up on your phone, couldn't you? though to him yode, and him saluting as beseemed best. Paradel, of course, is an allusion to Paris.
Okay.
So we're going to find that he's a bit of an adulterer. Yeah.
Manhole.
That kind of thing. Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Himbo.
As busy and best, and first inquire of tidings fair abroad, and afterwards on what adventure now he rode. And in fact, he ends up running off with a woman called Helenor. So
oh, yeah, Helenor. Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Nice.
Who therefore, thereto answering, said, "The tidings bad, which now in fairy court all men do tell, which turned hath great mirth to mourning sad, is the late ruin of proud Marinel, and sudden parture of fair Florimel, to find him forth. And after her are gone all the brave knights that doon in arms excel, to safeguard her, you wander all alone. Amongst the rest my lot unworthy is to be won." So it's not a very organised search, is it? It's a bit lackadaisical, really. "Our gentle knight," said then Sir Saturnine, "my labour all is lost, I greatly dread, that hath a thankless service on thee ta'en, and offerest sacrifice unto the dead. For dead I surely doubt that mayest stead henceforth forever Florimel to be, that all the noble knights of Maidenhead, which her adored, may sore repent with me, and all fair ladies may forever sorry be." Incidentally, another example of that topos of imprisonment for desire done is Ecrasia with her lovers.
But again, it inverts it.
Yes, it inverts it, that's right. Mm. And of course, Lucifera keeps lots of chaps in her dungeon, although she, as far as we know, doesn't
do much with them. It's just fun to have them there.
It's just fun that. Yeah, exactly. quite. Well, actually tortures them, doesn't she? But, a girl's got to have a hobby.
If you've got men imprisoning your dungeons, what else do you do with them?
Exactly. My thought, exactly. "Which words in Paradel had heard, his hue gan greatly change and seemed dismayed to be. Then said, 'Fair sir, how may I mean it true that you do tell in such uncertainty? Or speak ye of report, or did ye see just cause of dread that makes ye doubt so sore?'" It's very interesting. There are languages of the Amazon basin. You're probably familiar with this idea, aren't you? But that have...
Specify further, please.
Well, they require any assertion of fact to be in a verb form that identifies the authority for that assertion, and it can range from "I saw this with my own eyes" to "somebody reliable told me," or
"I heard from
another source." A bloke in a pub told a bloke in a pub told me, or it's the kind of thing you'd expect, from those two. That's what they kind of would do, and you can't utter it neutrally. It's like in English, you have to say whether something is single or plural, so you have to say "person" or "persons unknown" rather cumbersomely.
Yeah.
If you don't know, you cannot make a statement without committing to a verb form which encodes one of those. Isn't that marvellous? So sophisticated compared to English.
You have to actually commit.
You can't just say, I bet.
Kind of knew about that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So if you say, "Bill is fucking Gloria," that's not enough. I mean, but it's encoded in the verb. You don't even have to add that.
That's
so
beautiful.
It's optional in English. I know. Think of what that would do to journalism.
Well, burn it down. Yeah.
Sorry. Because you've got to admit to lying if you're lying.
Yeah. Or expose that you are not.
Yes, or you're just shooting in
informed.
The dark.
Informed.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
And academia.
Yeah. Exactly. It's brilliant and so sophisticated. People talk about primitive languages. It's nonsense. All Aboriginal languages are vastly more sophisticated than English in so many ways. So that was a little excursion.
That's lovely.
It's just that had they been in the Amazon basin, these two knights,
which words from Paranol had heard his
he wouldn't have to ask that question. He'd have his answer in the statement. "For Purdy else how might it ever be that ever hand should dare for to ingore her noble blood? The heaven such cruelty abhor." These eyes did see that they were ever rude to have seen, quoth he, when as a monstrous beast the palfrey, whereon she did travel, slew. And of his bowels made his bloody feast.
Jesus Christ.
Yes. When speaking token showeth at the least, which speaking token showeth at the least her curious, a certain loss, if not her sure decay. Besides that more suspicious increased, I found her golden girdle cast astray, distained with dirt and blood as a relic of the prey. Ay me, said Perenel, the signs be sad, but God turn the same to good soothsay. That lady's safety is sore to be dread, to be feared. Yet I will not forsake my forward way, yet trial do more certain truth bewray. Sorry, till trial do more certain truth bewray. Fair sir, quoth he, well may you succeed, no long shall Saturnine behind you stay, but to the rest which in this quest proceed, my labour add, and be partaker of thy speed. Ye noble knights, then said the squire of dames, well may ye speed in so praiseworthy pain. But sith the sun now gins to slake his beams in dewy vapours of the western main, and lose the team out of his weary wain, might not this like you also to abate your zealous haste, till morrow next again both light of heaven and strength of men relate, which, if ye please, to yonder castle turn your gate. That counsel pleased well, so all ye fear forth marched to a castle then before, where soon arriving they restrained were of ready entrance, which ought evermore to errant knights be common. Wondrous sore they thereat displeased they were, till that young squire gan them inform the cause, where that same door was shut to all which lodging did desire, the which to let you wait will further time require. We're going to meet up with Britomart again.
That's right.
Yeah. Which will be fun.
And Albeco. That's, yeah, the dinner party.
That's right, yes. That's a strange, again, out of a sort of Italian 1960s film or something.
Yeah, and then we're in the House of Boucheron, aren't we?
That's right. So that's where we're headed.